The world-famous Conservation Canine Camp will next be running in southeast Queensland, Australia, from the 21st to the 25th of August. Join us with your dog to start your journey into conservation detection. Visit padfoot.com.au to book your place today. Welcome to the Conservation Canine Podcast. With me today, I've got Latoya Jamieson, who works for Zoos Victoria in their conservation dog team. But she's here today to talk about the launch of the evaluation guidelines produced over what seems like forever by the Australasian Conservation Dog Network. Now, as a disclaimer, I was part of the team that was working on the development of those guidelines. I mean, most of the work, by far, most of the work was done by Latoya. But, you know, if it sounds like I don't know what I'm talking about, I really should. So, Latoya, welcome to the show. We've been trying to get you on here for a while, eh?
It has been a bit of back and forth, but happy to be here and talking about this.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's talk about the guidelines. And so what has the AECDN done? Why has it decided to produce a set of guidelines in the first place? What drove that?
I guess we should start by saying, so the AECDN, the Australasian Conservation Dog Network, formed in about 2017 in the light of conservation dogs kind of exploding in popularity in Australia. And it just was a group of like-minded individuals who were passionate about working with conservation dogs and how they could be applied, but wanted to make sure that we had a supportive, open network who could be sharing ideas to make sure that we'd be working with dogs to their biggest potential in a safe and effective way. And once we had formed this network and we started talking amongst all these teams of researchers, dog handlers and trainers, as well as the clients they were working with, we saw that there was this massive need for guidelines or standards, basically a way of evaluating teams' safety, welfare and detection success in the field environment to make sure that these teams are, yeah, working at their best capacity. So that's when we started these conversations as the network in about 2018. We formed the competency committee, and several of us started working on seeing where we currently were at in Australia, where other organisations were internationally. And, yeah, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel, so started looking at things we could pick and choose from everyone else pretty much.
So is that the way we've gone about it? Because that's what I was going to kind of raise, really, was obviously in this field there are various approaches, standards, people working on different ways of doing this all around the world. So how did this come about? Did the AECDN just decide that, you know, that there wasn't an existing one that was suitable for the Australian or Australasian landscape? What was the original thinking? Because we must have spoken about, a lot of the other ones around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the original thinking was that it'd be really simple, really straightforward. We could put a list of trained behaviours together. We'd just get teams to do that. They'd tick those boxes and done. You've assessed teams. You've provided some level of confidence to their clients and collaborators. But diving into what everyone was doing around the world, how different everyone's assessments were, even though they were trying to assess for those similar things, I think it really made us see you can't just have a one-size-fits-all assessment. So in Australia, we have such unique species that we're working with that have such specific requirements for dog teams to be working in such a unique environment as well. So that's when we're like, okay, so how can we be creating an evaluation that's ticking all the boxes, is, I guess, providing us the best picture of how this team will actually be working in the field rather than purely how they're performing under an assessment. And we just grew from there and started to talk more to our members, see how they work, and really kind of bring it back to, okay, at the end of the day, what do these teams all need to be doing to make sure that they're working safely? and how can we provide these teams with tools for evaluating those teams so they can be providing data that's meaningful to their collaborators, to their clients, and also to their teams themselves, so they had an understanding of where each dog team was at, areas to improve, and hopefully areas to grow and improve on in the next 12 months.
Mm. Yeah, because it's one of those things. I mean, obviously, this has been talked about in plenty of interviews. Yeah, there's this whole hot topic of certification or standards and so on. And yeah, there's never, and I think it's safe to say that the ACDN team took that on board. The fact that we can't agree globally on a particular way of doing it kind of almost became a bit of a bedrock, for the way the ACDM was designing it. It was sort of like, all right, okay, it can't be, fully prescriptive. It can't be, it's got to be, flexible enough to suit different circumstances, different projects, different parameters, all of that kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about, before we get into the detail of it, what's the flavor of the kind of ACDN evaluation guidelines? I mean, how do they kind of sit in comparison to some of the others around the world?
I mean, it's always hard to compare against the other standards or evaluations because, like I said, they're trying to assess those particular dogs in those particular fields. I would probably assume that our evaluation is a lot more fluid in the way that it's assessing their teams. So rather than setting up, like I said initially, God, wouldn't it be easy if we could just assess the dogs? Like, can you do a stay? Can you do an emergency recall? Perfect. You've done that on an oval. You're competent. You got your certificate. It's beautiful. But really, it's not providing us an image that's going to be helpful to anyone. So I think our evaluations are hopefully as accurate a representation of how conservation dog teams are working in the field as we could possibly do, taking into account that the species that the teams are working with, areas that these teams need to be covering in their day-to-day, and also the welfare that needs to be put on the animals and on the animals in the working environments. So their whole of life welfare. We're hoping to tick those boxes, making sure that dog teams are taking those into consideration before they even start thinking about taking their dogs into that working environment. So hopefully we're at least on par with the other evaluations that are currently out there, but we're always going to evolve and improve as we go.
Yeah, sure. So let's get into the detail then. I mean, obviously, you're by far the best person to talk about this because you've been immersed in it for so long. So how does the evaluation work? How's the ACDN got this set up now?
Yeah. So I should say that we have these guidelines that will soon be up on our website. And it's quite a long document. I warn you, it's not going to be a quick read, but we did this intentionally because we wanted to provide enough detail that a dog handler team could pick up this piece of paper, have a solid understanding of where they should be heading, for example, with their dog team, things they need to be taking into account, which will be very helpful for new handlers. But also for experienced handlers, they could still pick it up and be like, okay, this is how I want to be evaluating my dog. How am I going to set aside the 2 days or 3 days or however long it's going to take to set up these trials, run them through? So it starts with having a conversation with people that you are hoping to evaluate your team. So we're suggesting a peer-reviewed approach, which the ACDN is obviously perfectly set up for. We have members who, in theory, could contact another member who works in their state, say, would you be interested in evaluating our teams? Here is the documents. Here is the data sheets that you could be using. And this is my target species. So then you'd be selecting your area. So, for example, one of the species I work with, broadtooth rat, I would be selecting areas with tussocks. I would ideally be surveying areas where I know that the species isn't, so we can account for whatever we're putting out. There's nothing else there. You'd be checking that area is safe. So this is where the due diligence of the handler begins. and Zorf. So I guess a part of the assessment, are you checking for baiting? Are you checking if you need permits to go into that area? Okay, brilliant. You've got that sorted. You've got your evaluator, which could potentially also be a university group, your clients themselves. Then you start setting up what's the density of your targets going to be. So do you work with a species that you only have one find every couple of weeks? Or are you lucky in working with a species that you find every 10 minutes? And that'll really guide how many targets you're putting out in the environment. And then pretty much you hand it over to the evaluator. So they'll be setting up an area for you, hopefully several, based on the areas that you generally cover in each of your searches. So my areas are typically up to 30 meters by 30 meters. I do searches of up to 10 minutes. So that's the area that I'd be setting up for my dog team. Dog teams who work similar to me wouldn't be evaluated in how quickly could they survey a hectare and expect it to work for an hour straight, because it just doesn't represent how they work. So once the evaluator has all this information, they're setting up those multiple search areas, and then you go through the fun of being evaluated, which is not stressful or nerve-wracking at all. But hopefully by now you've and your team are experienced in what you're doing. So then you'd run through those assessments. Really crucial that the handler doesn't know where the targets are located, how many targets are out there, or even if an area has targets. And then you go through those evaluations, and the evaluator records a whole lot of data during that time. So they're recording the weather conditions, what the environment is that you're surveying, how many targets are out there, how many have you found, were there any false alerts to the non-targets that were planted, and then also how many times the dogs perform their essential behaviours. So, James, you'd know, but this is quite a pain in the ass to put together. What is an essential behaviour and what is not an essential behaviour? I think our competency committee stormed about this for quite a long time.
Absolutely, and as all the listeners of the podcast will know, that I would have been an absolute pain in the ass as part of that process, because I come very much from the school of letting my dogs kind of do what the hell they like and go, yeah, great.
And then other people are at the other end of the spectrum, and we're trying to create, these guidelines that works for everyone. So it was very challenging. So what we came back to is having it's split. So you have your essential behaviours, which we believe that every dog team must be able to complete with 100% reliability in order to be working safely. So those two behaviours are a recall. So you do your cued response. So that could be a whistle, just the cue come, and the dog has to immediately change its gait and head back to you. And then the emergency stop. So as soon as you give that cue, the dog has to be stationary straight away. And then the second lot, the non-essential, that's where you can put in as the team whatever behaviours that you use every single day. So would it be an extended stay? Would it be a change of direction? A heel for some people? Those are really important behaviours. So you have the option.
And there might be project-specific behaviours as well,
Absolutely.
So some of those behaviours, a heel, if you're working in kind of urban areas, for example, or something like that, or very, very delicate kind of, areas, then that's very important. If you're just thrashing around the bush looking for big smelly holes, less important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And same with the extended stay. It's like there's so many teams. Me, myself, I rarely have the dog an extended stay where I'm out of sight, but I know for some teams that's absolutely essential. So this non-essential category, even though for you it may be essential, you still have the capability to list those behaviours, and the evaluator will be recording how many times you cue those behaviours and how many times the dog actually performs those behaviours, which will give us a calculation for cue reliability.
So I guess, just to be clear on that, then it's one of these things where we're not saying that those behaviours are less important. It's just they're more project specific. So the evaluator, if you say as part of your evaluation, as part of my work profile, I need an extended stay or, a heel or whatever, then you're still held to the same requirement of being able to do it,
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just not a requirement of the evaluation unless it's project specific.
Exactly. We didn't want everyone to have to start working their dog teams differently how they already do just to tick the box on this evaluation to say, yes, they can do it. We want to make sure that the dog teams are just setting up the best that they can for these, excuse me, search environments. So that's why we had that distinction between essential and non-essential.
Yeah. And so that goes, excuse me, that now goes to what you were saying before, in that it's very nerve-wracking, you know, to do the evaluation, because in some respects you could look at, if you weren't taking the guidelines in the spirit in which they're intended, then you could look at them and kind of go, right, I could have this as a very, very light touch, you know, evaluation minimum. You know, all I've got to do is make sure my dog recalls and stops, you know, and obviously, you know, searches and, you know, is performing in terms of its function. Yep. And, you know, I get signed off, but it's not really a sign off process, is it? It's not really something that people, you know, if you were to not achieve the standard, it doesn't mean you can't operate, I guess, because obviously the ACDN doesn't have, you know, oversight over the industry, but it's meant to be a kind of a critical friend, I suppose, process, you know, to feed that continual improvement. Is that right?
Yeah. So we didn't want to just set a pass or fail assessment. There's definitely value in doing those, but we more wanted to create these guidelines so we could be seeing where your dog team is currently at and where you need to be in the future. The only thing where there is hard and fast benchmarks is around welfare and safety. So yeah, with the essential behaviours, they have to be 100% throughout all of your evaluation, and you must perform those behaviours at least 3 times. And also for the welfare documents. So I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but before you'd even start those evaluations, you are sending on any documents that your evaluator requests to them. So that could be whole of life, that could be your training protocols, that could be your JSAs, any of your animal ethics, you're sending that on. And if the evaluator is seeing red flags for, I don't know, for example, how you're managing your dogs, or you've never considered baiting and the risk of high winds or fire in the search, that could be a red flag to have a discussion. So those are the only hard and fast is around the safety and welfare, not with sure, the detection success. Okay. And I think that mostly came around because for some teams, you need as close to 100% search sensitivity as possible. But other teams, if you're finding 40% of the targets and all other methods that are currently being used are finding less than 10, then that 40% looks mighty impressive and you just simply don't always need it. So it goes back to the project-specific aims of this evaluation.
So talking about the welfare aspect, just in a little bit more detail, just very briefly, this kind of partly comes down to selection of the evaluator, doesn't it, as well? Because, you know, I mean, one of the things that came very clear is through the process and just talking to colleagues around the world, yeah, everyone's got a different opinion on a lot of things. So, you know, to use as an example, we can think about electronic collars. You know, so electronic collars, you know, I mean, a lot of us use, you know, the Garmin Alphas, you know, in the field for GPS tracking, you know, to record the dog tracks and that kind of thing. You know, if you've got the TT15, you know, collar with that, then obviously it's got that kind of control, you know, element available, you know, to it as well. Obviously here in Australia, and I don't know whether it's the same in the US, around the world, but, you know, electronic collars are permitted in some states and not permitted in other states and that kind of thing. So is there a process, I guess, to say that a team out there was to get, you know, to request an evaluation, they didn't know the person evaluating them, and say they had, you know, an approach where they used a method that maybe the evaluator was personally averse to. How would that be resolved through the ACDM process?
It's a very interesting question. I think it starts with having these open conversations where everyone is being authentic to where they're currently at, how they got there, and what they're comfortable with. So I guess if you were having these early conversations and, for example, you approached an evaluator who was not in favour of using e-collars, for example, like you were talking about, if you were to demonstrate why you're using that collar, how you make sure you're using it in the most appropriate and ethical way possible, and you're both comfortable with that usage, then I would assume you would go forward with the evaluations. The evaluator might decide when they're writing up their summary or report that during the course of these evaluations, the handler had an electronic collar on the dog. It was not used, but it had been previously used in training. So I think it's just all about opening up that line of communication and ensuring that whatever method you're using, everyone's using it in the most effective, least intrusive way possible. And yeah, just having these conversations, really.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was getting at, really. I mean, I know I threw you a bit of an ugly one there to get your teeth into, but it's more a case of, so say, for example, you know, we're looking at those required standards of the immediate recall and the emergency stop. Yep. I presume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it'd be up to the evaluator, because, as you said, you know, the recall or the stop, you know, cue could be a whistle or a word or a, you know, hand signal or whatever, but it could also be, you know, a remote signal via the electronic collar.
It could be, yes.
Yeah. So again, it goes back to what I'm trying to do at this point. I'm just trying to use this as an example to illustrate the flexibility that's been built into this ACDN approach. You know,
yeah. I think that would also go back to, if that was how you were cueing your dogs, if the evaluator had early on requested your training protocols and what your cues are and things like that, which I assume anyone's client or collaborator could also request those documents, that they just have an understanding of this is how it's used. But then, of course, any evaluator, when they're writing up the report, if they felt like the handler was overusing that correction tool, they can include that in there. So there is a stipulation in our welfare section. If at any stage the dog handler or the evaluator believes that the dog team's safety or the safety of others is at risk, they can cease the assessment. So depending on how people are using those tools, that could happen as well. But yeah, it's not actually something we've spoken about before. Thanks, James.
And I knew that. And so I thought it was interesting, you know, to throw in there, because I know there are a lot of handlers around the world, you know, that do use electronic collars very effectively. And these are the people that are very, very skilled in their use and very knowledgeable about the correct use of the tool, and do use it as a remote training aid rather than an aversive, you know, correction. It's kind of good to just air those kind of questions. So another one, I guess, and this one came up, I think, as part of the ACDN conference in Canberra a few months ago as well. How do we make sure that there's no bias in that kind of assessment or evaluation process?
It's a really good question, and it's something that we struggled with when designing this. How can we make an evaluation accessible in the way that you may not have to pay a lot of money to approach a professional who does this to evaluate your team and make it more user-friendly while still having very clear standards? And that's why we went with the peer-reviewed. And we were hoping that dog handlers or trainers, researchers, ecologists, whoever it is in the ACDN would be able to evaluate other ACDN members who don't have a vested financial, personal investment in how these teams perform. That, of course, does have bias. Humans are very biased creatures. Sorry,
my dog's trying to sneak in through the back.
Everything has bias. Yes, absolutely. Everything has bias. So there's always other options. So you could be asking your clients or collaborators, whoever's employing your services, to run these evaluations. So they want you to be the best you possibly could be. So they're less biased, I would assume, to be setting up these evaluations in your favor. And you could also be contacting university groups, for example. Back when I was still studying, I was evaluating dog teams, and it seemed to be a model that worked really well for us at the time. So those are a few of the options. The evaluation was set up So we intentionally didn't have rating systems. So, for example, a 1 to 5 of how well did they complete that behavior? It's purely, did they complete the behavior? Yes or no. Did they find this target? Yes or no. And also video recording these evaluations on top of that means that both the dog handler can review this footage and anyone else would potentially have access to it. So hopefully we've covered some bases.
Yeah, I think it's a great way of doing it. And I when I was looking at the final versions, I was quite pleased with the indication that it could almost be evaluated by anyone, as you were saying about clients and so on. The evaluator doesn't necessarily need to be somebody with 20 years experience in conservation dog world.
No.
You know, it's, as you said, the evaluation process is, you know, very much kind of did they, didn't they? You know, and that sort of thing. It's very prescriptive in the way of, you know, set this out, design, you know, with the expert, which is obviously the team, design the actual kind of assessment, or evaluation plan and run it from there. Do you think there's a value, well, for and against arguments for, you know, for whether you use somebody with the 20 years experience in the industry versus, you know, an other stakeholder, like a hiring body or something like that? What do you think?
Yep. I think there's benefit, and the New Zealand assessments already do this in having two evaluators whenever they're assessing teams. So in my perfect world, I would be having a person who has the detection dog knowledge, so has all this understanding about how they should be handling odors, how they should be setting up areas for dogs, not just walking straight to where they plan it and out. So they're all across the dog stuff and how teams work. And then you also have a person who is either an ecologist, a researcher, whoever it may be, who has expertise in that particular species that they're working with. So they'll know, yeah, this would be an area that we'd search, or this is where we'd be finding that animal, or this is where we'd be expecting to find these pellets, and setting it up from there. It's not always a possibility, though. Of course, having that model would possibly cost a lot of money or a lot of time. But in the ideal world, that's how I would be suggesting these evaluations are set up.
Yeah, yeah. So talking about the document then, so what do people get? So you've got a team that wants to be evaluated. They want to find an evaluator. Maybe they can't think of somewhere. So I'm just trying to run a scenario here. Yeah. How, if you've got a team, you know, you're working out in what somewhere and you want to be evaluated, you know, what's a way of you going about that?
So firstly, I'd go on our ACDN website and checking out our database and seeing people that are currently working in your local area, and making contact with them and seeing if they have the ability or the interest in evaluating you. If you can't find anyone local, the next point of call would either be the competency committee or the ACDN contact. So we could feed that onto the executive committee and do a more broad call out to see if anyone would be interested. Hopefully from there, we would either have contacts or someone within the network who would be interested in helping, because at the end of the day, we're all going to need to find some very kind and generous person to do this for us.
Yeah, because it's not a small time investment or effort investment, is it?
No, exactly. And that's why we wanted to make sure the information that we're gathering from these evaluations is actually useful and isn't just a tick, I've done it. It's actually going to help shape future work, future training, and make us all better as firstly your conservation dog team, and then secondly as an industry as a whole.
Yeah, so talking about the future of it then, and I know the ink's still wet on the current version, but when are you planning on starting to work on version 2, Latoya?
So hopefully not just me. It'll be another group effort, and if anyone listening is interested in being a part of that revision, I'd absolutely love to hear from you. James will probably put my contact details in the footnotes or however technology works.
Sure, and on that, people don't necessarily need to be Australia or New Zealand based, do they?
No, absolutely not. So all of our main collaborators for creating this were from Australia and New Zealand, but our reviewers were international. So we had incredible people from Australia, New Zealand, America, the UK, So we would very much value anyone's input. And with that said, hopefully next year, by the end of next year, we'll be looking at reviewing all of these evaluation guidelines, seeing how we can improve. So if you have done these evaluations, we would love to hear your feedback, how we can improve it, and go from there.
That's great. Thanks, Latoya. Is there anything else to add, anything that you think we need to touch on before we finish up?
Oh, well, I'd firstly like to thank all of the contributors, because this was a massive piece of work.
Yep, no problem.
Several years. So that includes obviously you and me, but it also includes Luke Edwards, Dr. Cindy Hauser, Dr. Roman Christescu, Dr. Scott Thomas, James Fraser. You're all incredible. We could not have these guidelines without you. And a massive thank you to our 19 reviewers from the 16 different organisations. That was a massive document to review, so thank you for all that. And lastly, this is something that we're hoping will be a benefit to everyone, and these guidelines were designed for teams that are either about to begin their journey in the conservation dog world, so hopefully they'll have a bit more information, but also for the experienced teams who have been doing this for decades, we hope that this is going to be really valuable. So please send on any feedback, be kind. And yeah, I look forward to seeing all the beautiful data that comes from this.
Absolutely. So the guidelines are going to be available very soon on the Australasian Conservation Dog Network website, which I think is conservationdognetwork.com.au. Something like that.
I should know, but
I will put the correct one in the show notes anyway. Obviously, there's a Facebook presence as well and that kind of thing. So if you want to engage in a dialogue around that, that might be a good, you know, a good way of doing so. And we'll also work out a good connection, you know, way for Latoya personally, so that she's not getting thoroughly spammed on her work email by everyone around the world looking to pick holes in, you know, in the work that we've done over the last God knows how long it's been.
Like 5 years.
5 years. Jeez. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Definitely time for a beer. Look, yes. I mean, we, on behalf of the rest of the, you know, the committee that actually worked on these things, I can only thank Latoya for the incredible amount of work, you know, and effort that she's put into here, and particularly managing all the egos, because, you know, we've all got our own opinions. Some of us are quite forthright with them, and so she managed to handle all of us, you know, pretty well. And I think everyone, you know, get on, have a look at the guidelines, you know, have a read over them. You know, it is an iterative process. It's a work in progress. You know, if you do have feedback, if you find something that you think could be done better, or, you know, isn't quite there, you know, do let the team know, because it will be factored into future conversations, you know, as this document is, and this approach is developed and finessed, you know, over time, because it's meant to be a living thing. It's not a kind of a one stake in the ground, you know, type project, and we move on to the next thing. You know, this is so important, you know, particularly, as Latoya said, down in this part of the world where we have some fairly unique challenges, you know, particularly in terms of welfare and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's absolutely hot and sneaky, and, you know, all manner of things around here.
Yep.
So
the joys.
Cool. Okay, look, Latoya, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast to talk about that. Really appreciate your time on this. So thanks very much.
Thank you. It's great.
Thank you for listening to the Conservation Canine Podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please like, share, and subscribe wherever you find us.